Our next case for argument is Specialized Seating against Greenwich Industries. Mr. Ostfeld.
Good morning. May it please the Court, this appeal raises two important questions. First, what is required to satisfy the heavy burden of proof to cancel a registered trademark on the grounds that it was obtained by fraud from the Patent and Trademark Office? And second, what is the appropriate legal standard to determine the functionality of an overall configuration whose individual components are functional?
Mr. Ostfeld, before we get to those questions, there's an antecedent question about appellate jurisdiction. This case began as a quest for a declaratory judgment, and the district judge said that the prevailing party was entitled to one, but I can't find the declaratory judgment. It's certainly not in your appendix. Is there some place where I can find the declaratory judgment?
I will be honest, Judge Easterbrook, I haven't checked the record to see if an AO 450 judgment form was actually entered by the district court.
The Rule 58 judgment form was certainly entered, but it doesn't contain the declaratory judgment. The thing that's in your appendix says, it is ordered and adjudged that judgment is entered, period. Well, that's the most useless language you can possibly imagine. Right. In fact, we've given that as an example of completely useless judgments that don't comply with Rule 58. Is there a declaratory judgment? If the only thing the district court entered is that thing saying it is ordered and adjudged that judgment is entered, and I don't understand why both parties didn't instantly file a Rule 59 motion or perhaps a Rule 60A motion saying, dear judge, please enter the declaratory judgment.
Your Honor, the only other filing that I'm aware of in addition to the judgment form, which contains the defective language that Your Honor has pointed out, is the conclusion of the memorandum opinion, which does state the declaratory judgment.
We have said more times than I can count that the judgment is something different from the opinion.
I'm aware.
Now, it's always possible that this case is appealable under principle of malice against bankers' trust, because it's clear the district judge is done with the case, even though the judge has completely fouled up the process of entering a judgment. But what it does mean, I think, if that's the way in which the case is appealable, that there's no declaratory judgment, and actually you're the winning party rather than the losing party, because the other side didn't get any relief.
Your Honor, you raise an excellent point. I must confess it's not one that I've considered. If it would assist the panel, we would certainly be willing to submit a supplemental brief on that issue.
Well, it may be that what you need is to get the district judge to enter a proper judgment.
It may
be. It's not a question of filing memos here, but of asking the district judge to comply with the rule.
That may very well be the outcome.
Well, we'll think about that after hearing from Mr. DiVincenzo.
Thank you, Judge. I'd like to begin on the merits with the question of fraud, because the district court's finding of fraud is the issue that is having the greatest continuing implications on my client in terms of pending federal and state litigation. And it's our position that it should be reversed regardless of how the functionality issue is decided. The district court committed clear error on fraud in two ways. It committed fraud error on the materiality question because there was no evidence that any information omitted by Clarin materially affected the outcome of the trademark registration. And secondly, because there is no evidence that any individual acting on Clarin's behalf had a subjective intent to defraud the Patent and Trademark Office. There is no dispute between the parties regarding the stringent burden of proof that specializes.
Is there any point to this fraud business that the underlying question here is whether the design of the BBAC is functional? The district court held that it is, and unless that finding, which is made after a trial, is clearly erroneous, nothing else matters. You're, by beginning to argue fraud on the Patent and Trademark Office, you're arguing an issue that even if you prevail on it won't do you any good unless you win on the functionality issue. So perhaps you'd like to address the issue that you absolutely have to win on.
I would certainly be happy to address functionality. I would, however, disagree with Your Honor slightly on whether it matters. I would disagree quite a bit because the fraud finding is supporting a claim for attorney's fees below. It's supporting litigation in state and federal court for willful violation of the trademark of the Lanham Act. And even if we lose on functionality and it turns out that our registered trademark is not functional, we could still...
Has the judge awarded fees?
The motion for fees is still pending before the district court, Your Honor. However, Judge Easterbrook, at your...
So if he denied fees, what would be the significance of a fraud finding?
If there is a finding that a trademark was procured by fraud, then that subjects the entity who procured the trademark by fraud to liability under the Lanham Act, liability.
That would be true if the rules for issue preclusion were met. But an issue is preclusive against a litigant only if it is actually and necessarily decided in the litigation. If a district judge just goes on to decide issues that aren't necessary, and the fraud on the PTO was not necessary given the district judge's ruling on functionality, there's no preclusive effect of that judgment. That's just black-letter law.
All right.
So instead of worrying about what might happen in some other case, you really need to argue what's happening in this one.
All right. On the question of functionality, I think it comes down to a pretty basic question, which is in determining whether the overall configuration of the B-back chair was functional, should the district court have considered alternative folding chair designs that use different components?
But they all look alike.
I'm sorry?
They all look alike to me. I must be missing something.
All of the folding chairs?
All the chairs. Well, you don't have good pictures.
All the pictures.
All the things at pages 12 to 13 of your brief, the little postage stamp size pictures.
Yeah, they're very bad pictures.
Your Honor, what I would suggest is turning in the appendix to tab 18 on pages A211 through A214 of the of the appendix. This has, I think, larger and better photo images.
Why did you put it in your brief rather than the appendix?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why did you put the good pictures in the brief?
I think the photographs in the brief are shrunk versions of the, at least some of them are shrunk versions of these photographs, and I think the size of the photographs, and I apologize for it, I think the size was a concession to the fact that it was being inserted into a brief. However, if Your Honor will look at the photographs contained under tab 18, these are all competitors' chairs that compete directly with the Clarins B-back chair. They all look very different from the Clarin B-back chair. And it is our contention that it was error on the part of the district court to decide the issue of functionality without considering these chairs, these competitors' chairs that compete directly with the B-back chair.
Looking for your appendix.
Oh.
Without success. It's not in this, right? It's not in this binding.
Or is it? I'm not sure what that binding is,
well,
Your Honor.
It says Volume 1 of 1, Record on Appeal.
If I may approach the bench, I would be happy to hand up my...
Where you are.
All right.
Oh, here. We have a couple.
All right.
Okay. You want to look? Oh, you have. Do you have one? You're interested? Anyway, okay.
I've got the little pictures. That's enough.
All right.
Well, these don't look very different, I must say.
Well, Your Honor, what I would respectfully suggest is that to individuals who purchase in this industry, these chairs do look very different. If you look at the back design.
Where's your chair?
Our chair, Your Honor, is in the appendix at tab 4 on page A41. We also have a...
On page 14 of your brief.
It's also on page 14 of the brief, yes. We also have a physical specimen of our chair in the courtroom today. Because of the configuration of the podium, I didn't bring it up with me, but we can certainly...
That's your chair.
That's our chair, Your Honor.
You have someone else's chair?
We didn't bring all of those out because...
Did you
bring any
of them?
They are all in storage. I didn't bring any of them out of the evidence room because, given the configuration of the courtroom, I thought it would be a bit cumbersome.
Let me tell you, counsel, what my problem was with the argument about pages 12 and 13 based on those other pictures. I wonder whether you made in the district court an argument that the back design itself had so many substitutes that it wasn't functional. So I understood the argument you were making in the district court, and I think certainly the way Judge Holderman understood the argument you were making in the district court, was that the total design of the chair, including the X-frame and the braces and all of those things, was the trademark. It wasn't that the particular design, the particular way in which the tubing sloped in the B-back was the trademark.
That's correct, Your Honor. The argument that Clarin is making is that the overall configuration of the chair is the trade dress, although the sloping shape of the back is an important component of that trade dress, to the point where I think if you took the same chair and replaced the B-back design with an intermediate back design.
That I then lose the significance of what you're doing with these pictures front on of the other chairs to see that they've got sloped backs that look something like the B-back, although there is some difference. They aren't efforts to analyze, as you argued in the district court, the total appearance of the chair.
Well, the images here, almost all of them are what is known as either an intermediate back or a smooth arch back. And the district court heard extensive testimony from Dr. DeSantiago, the only structural engineer who testified, regarding the significant viability of the smooth arch back as compared to the B-back design or the A-back design, which is Clarin's other primary design format. And what Dr. DeSantiago testified to, and he ran extensive structural tests, he ran extensive analytical tests, is that from the standpoint of horizontal loading and vertical loading and torsional buckling and twisting, for all of those, the arch back design offers a more viable alternative than the B-back design. So at that level, Judge Easterbrook, I would suggest that there was significant evidence before the district court that using configurations that incorporate...
Look, you don't want to be committing the heresy, I assume, of saying that because design X is the best functional design, design Y must not be a functional design.
No.
You wouldn't want to say in the preceding case that a rectangular towel was not functional just because it wasn't as good as the circular towel at moving with the sun. The rectangular towel would doubtless be functional too.
Yes. We do not claim that there is, well, to borrow the court's language from Vaughn, just as there is no platonic form of a folding picnic table, likewise there is no platonic form of a folding chair. The basic function of a folding chair is to fold and to provide a place to sit. And the evidence that
you could make a chair in the golden ratio.
I suppose you could make a chair in the golden ratio. The evidence before the district court was that there are numerous configurations of folding chairs that incorporate some of the same elements as the B-back chair, some different elements from the B-back chair, and all of them fold and all of them provide a place to sit, and all of them compete effectively with Clarin's B-back chair in the markets in which Clarin sells its chairs.
Do you sell your chairs to individuals or, Home Depot or things like that, or just to large, hotels and so on that buy thousands of chairs?
I don't know if there is a retail side to the business. If there is, it's a relatively small side of the business. I know that by far the largest components of the business consist of...
Right. Well, though their purchasing agents are not going to be confused by any of this, are they? As to source?
I think there was evidence that the purchasing agents in these large markets could be confused as to source as between the specialized chair and the Clarin B-back chair Your Honor, there was a marketing expert who testified on behalf of Clarin.
Isn't that critical? Because confusion as to source is relative to the knowledge and experience of the purchaser. And, of course, if you're really purchasing in bulk, it's a big purchase, so you spend more time, figuring out what you're buying. It's not like buying a folding chair
Yes, Your Honor. I think it is critically important. I think it's an issue that the trial court should have reached. Unfortunately, we never got there because the inquiry stopped at the functionality level, respectfully, in our view, because the...
So you conducted a survey of purchasing agents?
Yes, Your Honor. There was a survey conducted, and there was a marketing expert who testified on that. I see that I'm now out of my rebuttal time. Unless the court has further questions, I'd like to reserve whatever time I have remaining.
30 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rostfeld. Mr. DiVincenzo, let's start with the question. Wait till you actually get there. Let's start with the question whether you won this case or lost it.
We won this case, Your Honor.
You wanted a declaratory judgment. Did you get one?
We beat their counterclaims.
Pardon?
We beat their counterclaims. They filed counterclaims seeking, one, a declaration that we infringed their trademark, and we won on that issue. And we also won.
So you think both sides are losers. They wanted a judgment and didn't get one, so they're losers. And you wanted a judgment and didn't get one, so you're a loser.
Well, we didn't get one because we haven't asked for it yet. As counsel pointed out, we sought attorney's fees, which the judge, rather than ruling on the attorney's fees issue, decided to hold it off.
About attorney's fees. I thought you wanted a declaratory judgment of non-infringement. And Judge Holderman said you were entitled to one, but I just can't find it.
Your Honor, we got that by operation of a denial, a rejection of the counterclaim.
Look, you get a declaratory judgment in federal litigation when the judge writes down the terms of a declaratory judgment and enters it as a judgment. You do not get a declaratory judgment when a district judge puts favorable language in an opinion.
I agree, Your Honor. But we won the counterclaim. The effect of winning the counterclaim was a finding that we did not infringe the trademark because the trademark was invalid. And if they had brought the case solely as a declaration or an infringement action, we'd exactly have the relief that we were seeking, which is a determination that we did not infringe because the trademark was invalid as a matter that it was functional. It included functional features. So that, Your Honor, is the circumstances as I see it concerning the jurisdiction, because there was, in fact, this counterclaim that was filed, and we won on the counterclaim, two counts of the counterclaim. Your Honors, this case squarely presents the potential conflict between competition and the assertion of trademark and trade dress rights and functional product designs. Clarin, as the lower court found, improperly tried to...
Complete your discussion with Judge Easterbrook. You're relying for the judgment as the last sentence of his opinion, right? Judgment is entered in favor of Specialized on each of its claims and on Clarin's counterclaims. Is that your that for you is the judgment? Is that,
yes, sir.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. The lower court found that Clarin had improperly tried to prevent competition in the double tube and channel X-frame chair business by obtaining a trademark while concealing the functionality of that product design from the trademark office. The district court properly rejected the attempt, and the decision there affirmed the balance that the Supreme Court has put in between the rights to compete and copy and the rights to trade dress and trademark protection the Supreme Court established in the Traffics case. It is our position that chair design is functional under any test of functionality that either of the parties present in this case. The real question on functionality, and counsel admitted it, here is they're not arguing that one particular element is a trademark, which is ornamental or arbitrary or non-functional. They are saying that the overall design, the gestalt of the chair, has some value greater than the sum of its parts, and that gestalt is, in fact, trademark and can be protected. But the real question in looking at the overall design, isn't it a simple question? Is the chair or the product in the shape it's in because of utilitarian concerns and reasons? And if you apply that test and ask that question of, is it in that shape because of utilitarian or functional considerations, The answer is unequivocally yes. They admit, as Judge Holderman pointed out, that every one of the claimed elements of their trademark, and if you look at the trademark, it's a picture, and it consists...
How would you suggest they... How would anybody trademark a folding chair? What would you suggest they do to distinguish theirs from yours?
Oh, they could use some...
Because they all look alike, right?
Well, they do have a similarity, and I think, as Your Honor pointed out, in the international publications, the cookbook case.
Please stand at the podium.
I'm sorry.
Do you have a trademark for your chair?
Specialized Seating does not have a trademark on the chair.
Pardon?
Does not have a trademark on the chair design.
You know, I'm no expert on these chairs, of course, but that looks like a lot better chair than a lot of the other chairs that we have pictures of. I would assume it's a lot more expensive, too.
It's more expensive and it's better. And the chair is actually, Your Honor, designed as a chair for use in stadium arenas, coliseums, and things of that sort. For example, my client's chair is a chair that's used at the NCAA NCAA basketball tournament, the Final Four chair. It is particularly useful because that form of chair is a narrower design. It allows it to be attached together to squeeze, put more chairs in the same amount of space. It has a better and more comfortable seating pitch. It is safer because in an auditorium, if you push a row of those chairs over either forward or backward, they collapse and they fold flat. Whereas the Y-frame chair doesn't do that. So it has a host of advantages for use in the auditorium and arena markets. And that was testified to clearly and is established by Clarins' own advertising literature. All of that functionality relates in part to each of the elements of that chair. And as the lower court specifically pointed out, that if you
is
take...
Is the name of the manufacturer stamped on these? Or?
Yes, Your Honor. We do everything we can to differentiate ourselves from Clarins. Specialized Seating or Spec Seats, our other name that we do have trademarks over the names, are in fact on the chair. Clarins is on the chair. Clarins' name, in fact, is stamped on the frame itself, and it's under the seat. So, yes, there are, and also on the back of the chair, if you look at it, there's a label that says Clarins and or Specialized Seating. So those chairs have identification other than the design.
What was this survey evidence you mentioned? The purchasing agents who were confused? What was that?
They attempted...
Is there anything in the record about that?
Well, there was examination concerning it. We cross-examined their expert, and I think we poked some holes in the expert's testimony and the reliability of the survey. There really wasn't a lot of... There really wasn't evidence of any confusion. These people are professional purchasing agents. They know whose chairs they're buying. And under those circumstances, there was no real evidence of any confusion in this case. And I don't think that, quite honestly, the question of whether they were confused or not confused goes to the question of the functionality of the chair.
I understand. I'm just curious.
So in this situation, the lower court certainly looked at the functionality of the total design. You read the opinion, and it's in there. It looked at it and said that if you look at the total design and you take all of the functional elements, and this trademark, I think it's important to understand, is a rendering and then has a description of multiple elements. Every one of those elements, it is conceded, is functional and relates directly to a particular advantage that the lower court heard testimony about, many of which are the result of prior patents that Clarins had obtained over in the over 70-year period it has been selling similar chairs.
Well, what about a design that makes a compromise between functionality and beauty? Right? You might have a very thin leg. Maybe that was considered beautiful in a chair, very thin leg. And actually, it'd be more functional if it were thicker. It'd be stronger, but it wouldn't be as elegant. And so someone tries to create an elegant chair. All the elements of it are functional, given what a chair is. But it's actually not as functional as it would be if the designer weren't trying to create a distinctive design.
In that situation, that might be what the Supreme Court was getting to in Traffics, that if you add something which is ornamental or arbitrary to the totality of the design, that might pull an otherwise functional product into something which is trademarkable. Here, there isn't any evidence that anything on that chair is anything other than functional. The double tubing channel, the X-frame design, and all of the things below the back had been subjects of clearance prior patents. The back design, the evidence is, that there was a prior design that was called the A-back that had the shoulders, something when I was in school you saw in schools. That was collapsing and breaking in auditorium, various auditoriums, one in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Spectrum. As a result of the testimony, an uncontroverted testimony was that Claren changed the design of the product from the A-back to this design, the B-back, in order to strengthen the chair so it didn't collapse. Indeed, Dr. Santiago, who tested these chairs only for strength and torque and not for comfort, resiliency, or any of the space requirements that are also functional, he concluded that the B-back was stronger than the A-back and that the design of the back was indeed functional. And that's the critical element. There's nothing in this chair.
Well, I can certainly understand the proposition that having a gradual slope of the tubing is stronger against vertical loads than having an S-bend, which is what the A-back has. But the rest, the thing that produces that is the design of the tubing, the frame, rather than the design of the back itself. Right, so why is the design of the back functional on that understanding?
Well, Your Honor, they use the same tubing in both designs. The only difference is the slope. The A-back is a double tubing channel.
Has an S-bend on each side, right. And this does not. Right, the thing that makes the back stronger against vertical loads is a change in the way the tubing bends, rather than the fact that the back comes up flush to the top of the chair, that it has the particular curve it has, and so on.
Yes.
So why is that aspect of the back functional? That's what I'm asking you.
It's functional because the expert testified that the design of the back was functional.
No, that's just circular. Explain to me why it is functional.
It is functional because by eliminating the bend.
Look, I'm asking you to assume that the S-bend is eliminated.
Yes.
And that the back is stronger against vertical loads by virtue of the precise slope of that tubing. The question I'm asking is why the design of the back piece, right, the thing that comes up to the very top of the tubing, has a particular shape and curvature, why is that functional?
The back piece itself as opposed to the frame. I'm sorry, Your Honor. The reason that is functional is because, as Claren's literature claims, that is specially shaped to fit the back of a person sitting there. So it goes to the comfort of someone sitting in fact, the chair.
Okay, so you think the function of that has to do with orthopedic concerns rather than with vertical loads?
I believe that's correct, right? That's what the evidence in the lower court indicated, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So under the circumstances, every single piece of that chair is functional. And Judge Holderman then went to the Publications International test and said, there's only one way. If you take all those pieces and try to make a chair out of it, you're going to end up with a chair that looks awful similar, if not identical, to the chair which they're trying to trademark. And under those circumstances, you would answer the question that the commentators have said is the critical question as to functionality. Is the chair in its particular shape because of utilitarian reasons? And the answer would that to be yes, because there's no other way to get those particular functional aspects, the collapsibility, the size, the comfort, the orthopedic concerns, and the like, as well as strength and flexibility, all into a given chair. And the law is such that a competitor is not required to pick and choose among the functional features that it can copy. We cannot be forced to say, well, you can have a chair that has some of those functionality, but you can't optimize functionality in its entirety. The chair's functionality for that particular marketplace is supported by the record in the lower court, which indicated very clearly that architects who designed auditorium and arenas, such as the United Center, specify a double tube and channel chair in order to maximize the chair, the number of seats, storage capacity, ease of setting up and taking down, and safety. It is a specified type of product in a very important and particular market area. The evidence also indicated that it is a substantial portion of Clarins and my client's business to go after that group of people. What Clarins is trying to do is say, you can't take all of those features. You have to use a tubular chair, which does not have the space advantages, and compete with us with that. And that's the flaw in their argument. Merely because they're...
Counsel.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Orsfeld?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes. I think the key issue here is the Publications International test, and respectfully, we just think the district court got it wrong in articulating the test that Judge Posner set forth in Publications International. What the opinion states is any product, any package, can be decomposed into elements that are not protectable. In the case of a consumer product, the elements might all be functional. If the product nevertheless presents a distinctive appearance, that appearance would be eligible for legal protection as trade dress unless it was the only way the product could look consistent with its performing each of the product's functions optimally. That's the problem here. We're not suggesting that you have to use a tubular channel. Thank you, Your Honor.
I think it would be a good idea for counsel for both sides to approach the district court and see if you can get Judge Holderman to enter a proper final judgment in this case. But whether you do that or not, we'll give you 14 days to file supplemental memoranda on the question whether we have appellate jurisdiction. The case is taken under advisement.